Lecture 2, Salvation for the Testimony of the Saints. An exploration of the question of the Christian understanding of salvation would not be complete if we were not to look also at the telos, the end of salvation, its goal. What are we hoping for? What does salvation look like in a concrete way? Since God created human beings, and since He is the God of life, the living God, salvation has to do with life with God, in a close intimacy with Him, sharing somehow in the divine life. Our imagination often portrays salvation only in the future, in the quasi-geographical realm of heaven. Although our mind portrays the achieved salvation, the achieved image of salvation as a space, what lies at the core of our belief in an eternal place of salvation is not so much a place than a relationship, a living relationship with the Lord. Such relationship is foundational in one's existence, because God created us and sustains us in existence. Since God is eternal, our hope is that the relationship with Him would also be, hence our belief in the resurrection and eternal life. If the end of salvation pertains to a living relationship with God, we can see easily the continuity between the final, otherworldly dimension of salvation and our lived experience of God. Salvation is not only a future reality. It is rooted in an experience of intimacy with God today. So to explore that lived experience of a relationship with God, we will now turn our attention to a fruitful path of theological knowledge, the recorded experience of individuals whom the Church recognizes as being in heaven with God, the saints. Although it might seem an unfamiliar method, great theologians like Ansgar von Balthasar advocated for the inclusion of the holy experience of men and women in theological inquiry. Through the lives and words of the saints, we can picture what salvation looks like in its effects. What does a saved life look like? We can hold that their incarnate relationship with God reveals what is at the core of salvation. At the same time, each individual experience is irreducible to that of someone else, but the experience of others can teach us and inspire us. In the context of this lecture, the subtleties of salvation would be seen through their lives with magnifying glasses. I chose to explore the salvific experience of two saints, St. Teresa of Avila and St. Teresa of Calcutta. Both are women, both are religious founders, and both are modern saints for which we have access to autobiographical material. Theirs are not the polished lives of ancient hagiography. They are women whose struggles, humanity, and closeness to God are bare open. We will thus proceed in three parts. First, they will be introduced briefly, after which, in a second part, I will present in broad strokes the narration of their journey of salvation. Finally, I will highlight important features about salvation that we can see in their experience, either common or distinct ones. Teresa of Avila was born in Avila, Spain, in 1515. She entered the Carmel of the Encarnacion in Avila in 1535 and took the name Teresa de Jesus, Teresa of Jesus. She contributed to the reform of the Carmelite order by establishing a first Reformed Carmel in 1562, St. Joseph, in Avila, and later a series of monasteries, as well as bringing into the spirit of renewal or reform already established monasteries. She died in 1582, leaving behind numerous letters and other writings, most of which were published soon after her death. She was declared a doctor of the Church by Paul VI in 1970. One of her major works is the Book of Her Life, in which she narrates in a lively style her journey with God and teaches about prayer. It is from that unfiltered book that we will draw most of the material to understand her journey of salvation. Our second witness, St. Teresa of Calcutta, was born in 1910 and entered the Sisters of Loreto in 1928 to become a missionary, which she soon did in India a few months later. After many years of educational work, Mother Teresa established in 1950 a new congregation, the Missionaries of Charity. Other branches would follow over the years. She died in 1997, and 10 years later, in 2007, some of her private writings and notes were edited and published under the title Come Be My Light. Through the excerpts of Mother Teresa's correspondence with spiritual directors and bishops, as well as some personal notes, we gain access to her narration of her experience of God, which was not as smooth as many had imagined. Through those two witnesses, we encounter sharply contrasted experiences of God. Both are saints and considered saved. Both are close to God. Both can teach us what salvation looks like for them in its prefiguration, and maybe also what our salvation might look like. So on the salvific journey of Teresa of Avila, the young Teresa recounts from her youth the desire to enjoy God forever, a thought that made her heart swell. Her attempts at building a hermitage in the house garden or of dying as a martyr with her brother were thwarted, but the memory remained. After a youth where vain pursuits were present, she opted for religious life, hoping that to live a purgatory on earth will gain her heaven. So despite having escaped death early on in her religious life, Teresa was for many years what we would consider a mediocre nun. Not bad, but lukewarm. Her conversion out of mediocrity started at the sight of a statue of Christ whipped. She was so moved that she undertook to return to the practice of contemplative prayer and thus open up a space for personal encounter with God. On the journey, she grew tremendously, being favored at times with a great closeness to God, even through words and visions. A central moment on our journey was the vision of hell that she was gifted with. Since she was already well engaged at that time in the path of holiness, that vision was not meant to frighten her. She was shown a place that she was freed from. But this comprehensive vision of hell brought her down the line, to labor with Christ, with God, so that other people might avoid going there. Teresa became a relentless collaborator of God's mission of salvation. Her part was mostly twofold. On the one hand, she established places of God, little paradises where God would be served. These are the New Carmels, where devout women would come to serve and praise God. On the other hand, she became, at the urging of her confessors and her sisters, a spiritual writer whose legacy is felt to our days. In her own spiritual journey, Teresa experienced at times visions, auditions, and ecstasies. A Roman sculpture of Teresa's Transverberation by Gian Lorenzo Bernini in Rome is very famous and has been analyzed and reproduced in many ways. But despite the richness of her inner life, Teresa never valued anything more than humility. After all, the goal of human beings is to be in accord with God's will. In one of her final spiritual texts, addressed to an old friend a year before her death, Teresa described the peaceful intimacy with God without anything superfluous that she was then enjoying. There, the continued presence of the Trinity remained, as well as the desire to do God's will. Mother Teresa's journey was very different. Her desire to be a missionary and help the poor was already present at a young age. At 18, she pursued her dream of religious life and was sent to India. After her formation, she spent many fruitful years as a teacher in her congregation school. She was very happy in her vocation. Then something occurred on September 10, 1946. On a train ride towards Darjeeling, a call within a call to satiate the thirst of Jesus by serving him in the poorest of the poor. Teresa did not experience a call for conversion from bad to good, but from good to better. This call to quench the thirst of Jesus would lead her some years later to leave her beloved community in order to establish a new congregation who would serve the poorest of the poor. Her congregation would grow exponentially, and she would become a superstar, the icon of a living saint, a friend of John Paul II, and a Nobel Prize winner, inspiring countless believers and non-believers. But despite all that success and the great proximity with Christ that she enjoyed, especially at the delicate time of the discernment of her call within the call, Mother Teresa experienced later, for decades, a feeling of distance from God. More precisely, we could say that she did not feel God's presence. In her telegraphic style, she writes in 1961 to Father Neuner, a spiritual director, and I quote, "Now, Father, since 49 or 50, this terrible sense of loss, this untold darkness, this loneliness, this continual longing for God, which gives me that pain deep down in my heart, darkness is such that I really do not see, neither with my mind nor with my reason. The place of God in my soul is blank. there is no God in me. When the pain of longing is so great, I just long and long for God. End quote. This feeling of separation from God, of alienation from Him, acquired a new meaning for Mother Teresa through the advice of her spiritual director. Her thirst for God was echoing God's or Christ's thirst that she had been called to satiate. Let us hear Mother Teresa again, and I quote, "For the first time in these 11 years, I have come to love darkness. For I believe now that it is a part, a very, very small part, of Jesus' darkness and pain on earth. You have taught me to accept it as a spiritual side of your work, as you wrote. Today, really, I felt a deep joy that Jesus can't go anymore through the agony, but that He wants to go through it in me. More than ever, I surrender myself to Him." End quote. She writes later, "No, Father, I am not alone. I have His darkness. I have His pain. I have the terrible longing for God to love and not to be loved. I know I have Jesus in that unbroken union, for my mind is fixed on Him and in Him alone, in my will." End quote. At that point, she realized that her faithfulness to her promise and her faith in God's faithfulness to His promise was what mattered, not the feeling of proximity with God and consolation. Mother Teresa thus experienced, in a very unique way, a union of will with God, a configuration to Christ through His experience of forsakenness, while deploying an intense apostolic activity on a global scale, transforming the lives of countless individuals. It was her unique way of living closeness to God. Now, from a more thematic perspective, I would like to highlight five features of salvation that we can discern in the lives of our two Teresas, either in one of them or in both of them. The first one, salvation and conversion, or salvation and growth. The salvific journey with and to God by both Teresas was one that was progressive, although important moments mark it out. A dialectic developed between disjunctive moments, moments of conversions, and an overall sense of continuity. These moments of conversion took different shapes. For neither of our two saints was conversion experienced from morally bad to good. For Teresa of Avila, one such moment of conversion on her journey was the recommitment to contemplative prayer as a middle-aged nun. Another important moment was the vision leading her to the foundation of a new monastery. For Mother Teresa, the continuity and growth was even more striking. Single-mindedness of purpose to serve God as a missionary seized her from her young age and remained with her unwaveringly. But that ever-deepening growth was also struck by an important event, the call within a call, that led her to take an extra step, inching closer to God. A second element to glean is that salvation happens at God's initiative, to which human beings collaborate. For our two saints, God clearly had the initiative. Sometimes in a very discreet way, a lasting impression and an emotional response to a statue for Teresa of Avila, or an initial lightning moment on a train ride for Teresa of Calcutta. In both cases, God followed through his initiative, offering help in the guise of spiritual consolations, sometimes even extraordinary events like visions or auditions, strengthening the resolve of each. Providential individuals came along the way. The clear priority of God's gift in their salvific endeavor was not lost on the Teresas. While they responded with great alacrity to God's call, they never became boastful in their successes. Readers of Teresa of Avila can even be annoyed at a recurrent reminder of her sinfulness and wretchedness, but her wholesome response to the divine invitation was rooted in a deep sense of humility. A third essential element is that of union with God. A genuine intimacy with the Lord runs through the accounts of their lives. But it will be lived out in strikingly distinct ways. For Mother Teresa, the union with God had somber overtones. Her communion was with Christ's thirst, with his forsakenness on the cross. Through the selflessness of her ministry, amid spiritual dryness, Mother Teresa was modeling Christ reaching out to the poorest of the poor. While the fruits of that union with God were apparent and obvious, her experience of union was paradoxical. The constant presence of God was lived out under the guise of a longing for or desire. God's presence was experienced as absence. For Teresa of Avila, on the contrary, the nearness of God was expressed at times in exuberant terms. Her conversations with Christ were full of affection and proximity, in need or abundance. She used the marital metaphor of the mystical marriage to express Christ's proximity to her. Through her collaboration with Christ's mission, with God's missions of salvation, she experienced a strong communion with God. Light is everywhere, even in the peaceful presence of God, expressed in her later writings. What we can learn from such contrast between the two Teresas? Well, that union with God, though essential on the salvific journey, can be experienced and expressed in very different ways. A fourth point, very briefly, is that of the centrality of Christ to both. It is obvious, but it is worth noting, that Teresa of Avila and Teresa of Calcutta, for them, the living out of salvation entails a strong relationship with the person of Christ, and even modeling out a modeling of oneself unto Christ. Different aspects of Christ can be highlighted, but Christ is the inescapable reference. And the fifth and final point pertains to one's salvation and that of others. For both Teresas, salvation is not simply a personal affair. By turning themselves towards God, They set their gaze in the direction of God's gaze towards others. Teresa of Avila's vision of lost souls brought her to contribute to the salvation of others. This apostolic thrust is visible in their tireless efforts to bring other people to work with them in their salvific enterprise. Mother Teresa was witnessing to God's care for the most vulnerable in society, going to the holes where they were living to bring them dignity. Teresa of Avila established oases of prayer in the midst of cities through her monasteries, but invited also her contemporaries through her writings to craft in themselves a space for the encounter with God. Through their life and ministry, both Teresas desire to do God's will and reach out to others so that they may take that road of union with God, that is, salvation.